Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this month's Hancock & Whitney Bank Economic Update Call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or any of its affiliates. If you have any questions during the call, please email them to david_lundgren@hancockbank.com, and he'll take those questions at the end of the call. Today on the call, we have John Portwood, Chief Investment Officer, our moderator, David Lundgren, Investment Director, and Investment Directors Luther McDougall, Greg Halusky, and Jeff Tangus. With that, Dave, I'll pass the call on to you.
Great. Thank you, Ashley, and good morning, everyone. John, I think the most obvious starting point is the issues and problems surrounding the Eurozone. So if you could, go ahead and bring us up to date on what's happening there.
Things are coming to a head pretty rapidly. I think everybody has seen that in the headlines almost every day. They're speaking in terms of now of a Greek exit that is potentially much earlier than was thought about before. I think up until the last month or so, there was the thought that, perhaps a Greek exit could be postponed for some time. You know, now the pressure is so intense, and, you know, we're seeing cash flows out of Spain and in some cases out of Italy flowing toward Germany and the UK and certainly to the United States, which has, you know, been pretty adequately reflected, I guess, in what's happened to our bond yields, the Treasury bond yields, that they believe something might happen much more quickly. But again, everything is still kind of up in the air. The Greek elections will occur June the 17th. If the what is considered the radical party, I can't remember the exact name of that party, if they win, that's probably going to be negative for the markets, but some people theorize that radical party would probably, come in line with reality and take a more moderate approach to what Greece should do anyway. But in any case, the next few weeks are probably going to be fairly critical. This morning, the European leaders are meeting to discuss the situation. So, you know, the betting is that they'll come up with something. It will probably kick the can down the road for a little while, but it looks like it's much more critical than was the case earlier in terms of when Greece might exit. And I think now almost everyone assumes that Greece will not be in the euro forever. Spain is kind of up in the air. Spain, a few days ago, asked for help from the euro to fund their banks, to recapitalize their banks, because they can't do it themselves with government money. So that's another issue out there, and nobody really knows, how this is going to end. There isn't a good solution. The more you look at it, and the more you read the research that chronicles the debt issues that a lot of those countries face, the reality that Greece and probably Portugal are insolvent and their problems cannot be fixed without an exit from the Eurozone appears to be, more prevalent. So, serious situation. A lot of it's already in the prices in Europe.
And when you say already in the prices, what do you mean by that?
Well, like stock prices, for example. This is not new news to anybody. I mean, it's already probably reflected in stock prices to a large degree in Europe, probably also reflected in stock prices to some degree here. Now, what is not reflected in stock prices, of course, would be a catastrophic Lehman Brothers moment that would result in a messy exit of, say, Greece or some other country from the Eurozone, or a massive run on the banks. I mean, there is a run on the banks. I guess they've described it as a rational run because people are taking their money out of Spain and have been out of Greece for quite some time in the fear that if they do leave the euro and go back to the drachma or the peseta, then they've lost maybe 30-40% of their value versus the euro. So, you know, it's pretty rational for people to get their money out. But that's going to have to be stopped after a while through some sort of bank guarantees. The Germans just haven't gotten around to agreeing to pay for the whole deal, which is ultimately what they would have to do. But, again, it's not new news. everybody anticipates that there are going to be problems there for quite some time and slow growth, probably recession for and a great deal of Europe for the rest of the year. So, the real surprise would be, I think, a catastrophic exit. And there's no way to, make a bet on that. We just don't really know.
Sure. I guess the other somewhat troubling news is it appears the U.S. economy is starting to slow a little bit. We've had some disappointing results as of late, notably the jobs number that we had on Friday. Non-farm payrolls saw only 69,000 jobs added in May, and I believe that was the lowest number since May of 2011. And I guess after making significant progress, it appears the job market in general is deteriorating. Talk a little bit about the job situation in particular, and then maybe just the overall U.S. economy, if you could.
That 69,000 job figure that Dave just mentioned was considered disappointing because the consensus was well over 100,000. I think probably somewhere close to the 150,000 that has sort of represented trend growth, I guess, for the last 6 months or so. But we have to remember that that number can be revised quite a bit, and there is a wide margin for error in each one of those monthly announcements. So the bottom line is that employment is improving. It's just not improving fast enough to really indicate we've got a particularly strong economic growth trend. We've talked before many times over the last several years, really, that we're probably in something like a 2% GDP growth world instead of the 3% that we were used to in the past. And, as the quarters go by, it appears more and more, likely that that is indeed what we're, what we're facing is a much lower trend growth in GDP for perhaps a number of years than we've been used to. And along with that lower trend growth in GDP, you're going to probably have, lower growth in employment, lower growth in earnings. A lot of things will be on, let's say, a lower growth path than we've been used to in the past. And if you look at a long-term trend, if you go back to 2009 and look at the trend in employment, the trend in GDP, the trend in a lot of different measures of economic activity, you see that the trend is still up, with some bumps along the way, but we're not really rolling over. It doesn't look like the major trend is changing that much. It's just that, we're operating at about half speed relative to what we've been used to in past periods of economic recovery. So, it's entirely possible that the next month or two or the second half of the year, you'll see better trends in employment growth. But certainly it's not a great number in terms of projecting the economy going forward. One thing to think about, too, you've got some fairly respected leading economic forecasters out there who think we're on our way to recession. At the same time, you have to recognize that their guess about what this recession will look like is like maybe zero growth or maybe 1% growth or maybe a negative 0.5. Nothing at all like what we had in 2008. And I know the last experience was pretty horrific. But you could have just a relatively slow period of growth, say something far below 2% for a couple of quarters, and the National Bureau of Economic Research could come out later and say, oh, by the way, that period, that soft patch we went through, we decided that was a recession because it was, say, a persistent decline in economic activity. Even though it wasn't negative, it doesn't really have to be. And if you go to the NBER website, you can find their description about, recessions and what they think represent recessions. And you'll find that recessions are not necessarily, 2 quarters of negative GDP. You could have 1 quarter of negative GDP and one that was very weak, for example, and they could come back later and call that a recession. So I guess that's still a possibility. Europe is obviously going to be in recession for most of the year, certainly Southern Europe, and we export about 14% of our goods and services, I think, to Europe. So certainly we would have be impacted to some degree. On the plus side, if you look, again, going back to trend growth that we see in some of these coincident indicators and trend growth in the leading economic indicators. I was looking last night at the latest report from the American Institute of Economic Research, and I have found their leading indicator series to be a fairly accurate predictor of what's to come, say, over the next, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 months. And all of their series are still in uptrends, but the significant negatives are consumption and employment. And, you know, those are very weak, as we already know. And so that those are sort of the wild cards that they see out there. But when you add it all up, you know, it still doesn't look like a recession is imminent. But at the same time, it doesn't look like we're about to have anything exciting in the way of economic growth either.
Okay. Well, Jeff, after hearing that, and John, feel free to chime in, QE3, is it on the horizon? Do we see the Fed take some kind of drastic action?
An excellent question. In a lot of respects, it's already underway. Of course, the purpose of QE3 is to drive down interest rates in the hopes of reviving the housing market. And by that standard, Europe is doing it for us, in that the flight to quality to U.S. Treasuries has driven Treasury yields down, especially the 10-year, to record lows. So QE3 of sorts is already being implemented by Europe. Not so much by the Federal Reserve yet. The Federal Reserve is trying to keep some powder dry in case the European situation becomes very dire. So they're hesitant to do anything of any magnitude before that takes place, because they have to have some bullets left to come to the rescue if things really get ugly in Europe. And they also realize that there's probably not a whole lot more that they can do. They're pushing on a string of sorts. Short rates are down at zero. 10-year rates are very low. But what they can do, again, in terms of reviving the housing market, is some sort of a modified operation twist, which could be considered a QE3 of sorts, in that they go out and buy mortgage bonds. Not treasury bonds and agency bonds like they've traditionally done, but mortgage securities specifically. And there's talk of a program that over the next 9 months they may be buying as much as $200 billion in mortgage securities to drive down mortgage rates even more. If you're a home buyer or a potential refinancer, this is great news, because last time I checked, a 30-year mortgage right now, if you tried to refinance, was about 3.75%. And while that seems low, it may in fact go lower from this point forward. So good news for the housing market, and that program is considerable in size. It's about double of what they've typically done in the past. So not the traditional QE3 that maybe a lot of people think about, But the Fed is active, but really waiting on Europe to see if it jumps in any major way.
All right, thank you, Jeff. Hey, Greg, let's go ahead and talk about the stock market. Pretty difficult month in May. The S&P 500 was down 6%. It actually felt worse than that. And really, despite the difficult month through May 31, the S&P 500 year-to-date was still up 5.2%. I know we've lost a little bit of ground since then, but, you know, 5.2% for the first 5 months of the year isn't necessarily a bad number. I think it feels so bad because of the increased volatility, and we had a nice little bit of momentum, especially in the first quarter, and we gave a big chunk of that back. I guess the other thing of note is that 2012 seems to be very similar to 2011, in that in 2011 we got off to a great start and then started to sell off late spring, early summer, and that continued until the latter part of the year. Do we see a repeat performance here in 2012 like we did in 2011? Where do we go from here?
Yeah, I think the pattern that you mentioned actually even goes back to 2010, and I think I may have even pointed that out in other calls where, as you point out, we start with a lot of momentum in the beginning of the year, and then, of course, the European issues come to head, and then the market sells off. I think, though, the distinction this year is slightly different, because I think at least it's my feeling, that the sell-off that we're having here is primarily due to just a pullback in stocks, mainly due to the momentum that we had the first 3 months of the year where we were up over 12%. We've given up part of that 5% already. I think roughly we're just below 2% on the S&P year-to-date. The Dow's gone negative. NASDAQ is still up quite strong, I think around 5, 6%. And the Russell 2000, which, of course, looks at smaller cap stocks, has gone negative also. But again, I mean, the payroll report was the trigger last week that kind of made everyone sell off. And I guess the big question is, was that a one-time event or is that a beginning of a series? And that's really difficult to tell at this point. But that's really going to determine whether we're just entering into a soft patch or a recession. I think most analysts are still looking at probably, you know, a slowdown this year in 2012, but not a recession. It's really 2013, and this goes back to the fiscal cliff on whether or not we really hit a recession. But as John pointed out, it could just be a mild slowdown or not the kind of recession that we had in 2008. One of the stronger things, actually, that the market ignored last week was the ISM report on manufacturing, which is actually pretty good. And again, the market seemed to focus simply on that jobs number and sold off. But again, let me just put it in perspective. I think the reason that I feel that most of this is driven more by the rise in the market this year is, if you think about it, in 2010 and 2012, we did have a lot of volatility. And it was primarily the uncertainty in Europe. But if you think about it, we ran up 12% at the beginning of the year, and we're really just going back to beginning of the year levels when we thought everything was okay. I think if the influence of Europe was really predominant in this particular sell-off, we not only would have lost that 12%, but I think we would have lost an additional, you know, perhaps 5 or 10%. So even though Europe sounds worse, I think the market really has factored in a lot of that trouble. And it goes back to, you know, it's an ongoing chronic problem over there. Some of the other positive things are that investors are looking at, investor sentiment and analyst sentiment is pretty bearish. And that's usually a pretty good contrarian indicator. So in that sense, you know, perhaps, you know, when things really get bad and no one wants to have anything to do with stocks, that's usually when stocks will turn around. I don't know what the bottom's going to be, but that seems to be kind of a positive. Again, I mentioned new orders were pretty good. It's a better outlook in terms of manufacturing and small business and hiring plans, and they're having a hard time filling jobs. So those are also some positives I see out there. Just looking at the earnings front, if we look at earnings per share estimates for quarter two of 2012, they're down slightly from 6.3% to 4.3%, but we're still positive, and I think I've mentioned on previous calls that, you know, the expectation is that we would see a deceleration in earnings. Revenues, actually, I think, are still growing at a double-digit pace, but it's not translating into earnings. The earnings, I think, as I mentioned, we finally broke our consecutive 9 quarters of double-digit earnings gains and have dropped into the single digits. Some analysts, I think, are still predicting that we do go back into double-digit earnings gains in the latter part of the year. I think just right now that the revenues are still able to grow, but I think costs are creeping up for many companies, and so that's translating into slightly lower earnings numbers. In terms of earnings guidance, analysts still are predominantly writing positioning earnings guidance downward about 2-to-1. You know, not horrible. That's not like what we want to see. But on the other hand, again, it's not devastating. And again, looking at valuation, the 12-month forward PE is still at about 11.9 versus the 10-year forward PE in a historical perspective at 14.5. So I think, again, just positioning it all, we probably have kind of a slow summer and, you know, we have to just see what happens. The economic numbers are still mixed, but they're not horrible. There's some positive along with some of the bad, and we're just going to be watching those closely going forward.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Greg. Appreciate that. Jeff and Luther, let's go ahead and talk about bonds for a minute. And, Jeff, you kind of alluded to this fact. It was really an incredible month for the 10-year Treasury. We saw the yields on the 10-year Treasury plunge from almost 2% at the end of April to 1.56 at the end of May. Was that purely a flight to quality as a result of Eurozone issues? And then I guess the second part of the question, and both you guys can tackle this one, is how has this move affected other segments of the bond market, specifically corporates and munis?
Well, you touched on the main event there, and that is the crisis in Europe really is driving money out of Europe to everywhere around the globe, certainly the U.S. being one of the primary recipients. So that's clearly driving interest rates at this point. It's also some of the secondary issues, I think, are going to be an apparent slowdown in China. Some softness here, with which John talked about, on our employment numbers and our economy in general softening up a little bit. So there was a number of factors, but it's more than anything is the same old driver of flight to quality, and it's most obvious in the 10 and 30 year, because all other Treasury rates have essentially dropped to zero here. So that's the main thing that's happening in the fixed income markets right now, but it is filtering over into corporates and munis, and Luther has a good take on those areas, so I'll ask him to comment on that.
Well, on the corporate side, as you would expect, since corporates trade off treasuries, spreads have started to narrow even more. Which is pretty much in line with what one would expect. There's a little bit of a difference or a disconnect on the high yield side, but on the investment grade side, spreads have definitely narrowed in line with the drop in the U.S. Treasury curve. On the municipal side, it's really a very different animal. In 2011, municipal supply was down about 33% from 2010, which is one of the reasons why in 2011 you had such a good year. This year, supply is up about 20%, and that's really what drives the municipal market more than anything else, is the level of new issues out there. That and versus the Treasury corporate market, which is much more institutionally oriented. Municipals have a greater deal of, if you will, retail or individual participation. And there is a point in the municipal market where you lose that individual's interest in buying municipal bonds. So while Treasuries fell by about 50 basis points last month, municipal market fell by maybe 5 or 10 basis points, and this is at the 10-year level. So in addition to an absolute level for individual investors, a pickup in supply so far this year, the fact that next 2 months are the biggest supply months in the municipal market, you really didn't see a whole lot of change in the municipal market. For example, right now, a 10-year AA muni gives you a yield around 2.25 versus that 1.5 to 1.6 for treasuries. And that treasury number is a pre-tax number, so it's said, say, 2.25 on a 10-year AA municipal versus a 1% after-tax yield on treasuries. That spread is really started to widen lately as we get to those absolute levels, and the relative levels seem to not matter as much. So municipal market kind of trailed. The spread market, the corporate side, pretty much kept up in pace, maybe a little bit of a change there, not much. But overall, the Treasury market is running at somewhat of a, well, I would say the other markets are, or you can put it either way you want. There's a disconnect. I mean, Treasuries are pure, you know, fear or a flight, and the other markets are not quite keeping up with the Treasury market.
Okay, thanks, guys. Jeff, another news item in the month of May was the J.P. Morgan trading loss. It got a lot of attention from the national media. Is that going to affect markets at all? And maybe give our listeners just a little background information on what exactly happened.
Yeah. Well, this is a classic example of what not to do if you really like your job. This is a fellow who was head of risk management at J.P. Morgan, who actually put on some some complex derivative trades thinking he was lowering the risk for the bank when, in fact, he actually was raising the risk exponentially without really realizing it. So, needless to say, he's no longer with the firm. The bottom line is that these big banks are extremely complex entities, and we've heard a lot about the Dodd-Frank regulation and the Volcker rule, all of which is aimed at either requiring banks to hold a lot more capital if they're going to do these complex transactions or not allowing them to do the complex transaction, all in the name of making the financial system more secure. In J.P. Morgan's case, what they were trying to do was really offset some of the risks that they had taken on by lending to some large corporations. And without getting too deep into the weeds, again, what a lot of times, as in the case in the financial markets, when you try to get too fancy and too smart, you end up doing trades on top of trades, and at the end of the day, you end up with this huge monster that is really very difficult to predict. So the net result was the market went away from them for a number of reasons, and they realized a net $2 billion loss. That's a $2 billion with a B there. There are some people speculating that it could end up being $4 billion by the time it's all over with, which is plenty. Which is not big enough to take J.P. Morgan down. They're much too large for that. They can handle that kind of loss given the income that they have. But it really points. It comes at a sensitive time when regulators are considering additional oversight and regulation on the banking industry, and the general thought is that this is certainly going to give the government and the regulators and those who would like to see more government control in the banking world to give them a lot of good arguments. So look for a little more regulation to come out of all this. The banks, at the end of the day, the banks are looking for each for every possible way that they can to either generate more income or reduce expenses. And this was just a case where they reached too far. It became too complex for their own good, and it ended up costing people jobs and costing the bank a lot of money. I think a lot of people will learn a lot of good lessons from all this, and it'll help to, in the end, make things a lot more secure in America. But this particular example is just a how-to if you wanted to do just about everything wrong in a hedge.
Okay, thank you. If anybody has any questions, please go ahead and email them to me at David_Lundgren@HancockBank.com. And I did get a question yesterday in anticipation of the call. And normally we do not like to comment on specific issues, but I wasn't surprised that we got this question. Comment, if you could, on Facebook. And I'm gonna add a little twist to that and maybe... You know, what's the general impact, if any, on the market? And since it's a stock-related question, Greg, do you mind taking that one for us? Any thoughts?
How about a bad pun? There's a lot of people running around trying to save face. For those of you don't know the story, obviously Facebook, which is a very popular social media software company, had their initial public offering where they offered stock to the general investing public. And typically what you'd want to see is that the stock price goes up once it goes out into the market. Instead, what you've seen is a 30% decline in that stock. It opened up at 38 and it's trading roughly around $26 right now. A number of brokerage firms have come out with a $25 price target. So essentially what you had was the underwriters had really run up the stock, and there was a lot of enthusiasm, and a lot of people thought that, you know, the stock was going to go a lot higher. Problem was is if you looked at the valuations of that stock, I think looking at it from, say, a revenue on multiples, it was trading at something like 40 times its 2013 revenues For comparison, if you look at Apple Computer, which I think it's hard to argue that not one of the most successful, it's one of the most successful tech companies out there. It's trading at a revenue for its 2013 revenues at less than 10. So people were basically saying that Facebook was four times as more valuable as Apple, and it, you know, it doesn't really make a tangible product. It's a software program for keeping in touch with people, and it's social media. So, you know, that kind of thing is pure demand. In a way, it's almost like a commodity in the sense that, you know, it's only as valuable as long as people find it interesting. And if something else comes out at some point that's, you know, a better mousetrap, you're going to see people migrate to that. There's some other issues apparently with Facebook. Most of their revenues are derived from advertising, and more people are accessing their social media type programs on mobile devices, phones and tablets. Facebook has been having a hard time transitioning from a PC-based type product to mobile and getting that advertising moved over to that new platform. So that is really what's driving the reduction in the price and the analyst write-down. So this is probably a less than successful IPO, at least at this point. You never know. I mean, it could turn around. These things can change on a dime depending on, you know, what they've got in the in their pipeline. So in the end, that's kind of the bottom line of what's going on with Facebook.
Any overall market impact, or is it just another stock?
I don't think overall, you know, I mean, it's obviously, it's high profile, but I think in terms of the market, I'm much more worried about what's going on in terms of our overall economic growth or Europe. I don't think it has that much impact.
Okay, great. I think we'll go ahead and conclude the call there. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. If you have any other questions or comments, please don't hesitate to contact us. Thank you.